Tess Gerritsen took an unusual route to her writing career. While on maternity leave from her work as a physician, she began to write fiction. She published her first novel, a romantic thriller, in 1987, Call After Midnight. Tess's first medical thriller, Harvest, was released in 1996. She then went on to write the incredibly popular Rizzoli and Isles series, the basis for the TNT series starring Angie Harmon and Sasha Alexander. There are now 11 bestsellers in that series. Tess's books are found in bookshops around the world, with more than 30 million copies sold. I'm so pleased Tess is stopping by the program today to speak about her new standalone novel, Playing with Fire. Welcome, Tess. I'm thrilled to have you with us on the Book Report again, and I have to tell you, I read the book in two sittings.
Oh, good. Glad to hear that.
What was your inspiration for Playing with Fire?
It came from a nightmare. Never happened to me before. I mean, this is my 26th book, and I've never had a book inspired by a nightmare. But I was in Venice for my birthday, probably drank a few too many glasses of wine, and I dreamt that I was playing my violin. The music was very strange and disturbing. There was a baby sitting next to me, and the baby's eyes glowed red, and she turned into a monster. I woke up and thought, whoa, what was that about? I knew there was a story here, something about the power of music to transmit emotions, evil maybe. I was walking through the streets of Venice that day, and I ended up in the old Jewish quarter and saw the plaques to the, you know, in commemoration of the 246 Jews who were sent away from Italy to go to death camps. And that's when the whole story came to me. So it was really about a dream, and it was about being in Venice and Italy at that particular time for me. It all came together.
Tell us about the book's two stories, the present-day one with Julia and the 1940s in Italy with Lorenzo.
Yeah, it starts with Julia, who's a violinist. She finds an old handwritten piece of music in a Rome antique store. Every time she takes it home to Boston, and when she plays the piece, it's called Incendio, her three-year-old daughter goes berserk and commits violence, stabs her mother. So Julia is now afraid of her own three-year-old girl, which is crazy. I mean, who's afraid of a three-year-old? But she wonders, is the music evil? Is her child possessed? Her husband thinks she's going nuts. To save her family, she has to find out what the origin of the music is, and she travels to Venice to find out who the composer was. And in her search, she uncovers the other half of the story, which is the story that's told starts off in 1938. It's a love story, and it dates back to a very dark time in Italy's history, which was during the Holocaust. You see a family, and you see a man named Lorenzo and the woman he loves, Laura, and what happens to them. So that's the historical story, and this is really where Incendio is born, in World War II.
In the book, Lorenzo has a treasured violin, La Dianora, the sorceress, passed down for six generations. And you're a violinist, isn't that right?
I am a violinist, and there are things about that. I describe the violin, how you hold it. Wood is a living thing. I mean, I always feel it's a living thing. So when you pick up a violin, especially an old violin, you sort of feel that everybody who's ever played that instrument has left some kind of trace of the leftover vibrations from the pieces they've played in the wood. And, violins, if you don't play them every day, they go bad. They need to be played. So there was something magical about picking up an old piece of wood that may be centuries old and feeling like you've inherited all the melodies that have ever been played on that instrument. I composed the music in Incendio, which the book is about, and it is performed by Suzanne Howe, who's a concert violinist, and that was the part she identified with the most in the book. She said that sense that you're playing a living thing, because she's playing she recorded the music I composed on a 1738 violin, and she feels that history in the wood itself.
And actually, that Incendio, for listeners of the audiobook, they'll be treated to hearing that composition, isn't that right?
Yes, they will be hearing a version of the composition, but the official composition, the official recording, is on iTunes and on Amazon, and you can hear a one-minute sample of it, Suzanne playing it on her 1738 violin. You can hear it on if you go to my website at tessgerritsen.com.
Mm. Will you explain the devil's chords found in the piece of music?
Yeah, you know, when I was I had been describing this music in such detail that I think it got into my subconscious. And halfway through writing the book, I woke up with the melody in my head. It took me about 6 weeks to write the music. It starts off with this very sweet and mournful melody, but it becomes more and more disturbing. Now, you know, ask yourself, what makes music disturbing? It's dissonance. It's where notes don't sound, they don't play well together. And one of the dissonant chords that is well known is called the devil's chord. It's a fourth, it's a diminished fourth. What it does is it makes you feel uncomfortable. And this is the kind of chord that was forbidden in the medieval church. They just thought it was evil. So, of course, I had to use it in my composition, right? I mean, there's no way I could not use that, the devil's chord, in this piece of music.
We're speaking with Tess Gerritsen on The Book Report. You know, I learned it from your book that 250 Jews were deported from Venice in 1943 and 44, and only 8 returned. And in fact, 20% of Italy's 47,000 Jews perished in the death camps. While you were in Venice researching the book, what kind of Jewish community did you discover there present day?
It's very much scattered. I think that the Jewish community in Venice is quite a bit smaller than it was. And they're no longer confined to that one little section, although a large number of the people who would live in that Canareggio neighborhood are Jewish. What I found most interesting, because I went to the Jewish museum there that's in the Ghetto Nuovo, was the fact that number you just quoted, which was that 20% died during World War II in Italy. But what's interesting is that 80% survived. Mm. Whereas you go to Germany and Poland, 90% died. So how did 80% of Italian Jews survive the war during the Holocaust? And the stories I uncovered of how they were helped by local Italians, I think that was what was very uplifting for me in the midst of all this tragedy and this horrifying time, that there were so many ordinary heroes who risked their lives to save their neighbors, to save their friends, to hide them, to help them get to Switzerland. A lot of priests and nuns did heroic things as well, hiding them in churches and in convents. And as a result, 170 priests and nuns were executed by the Nazis for this.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you think, if that ever happened to me, if I were given the choice, do I hide my neighbors in my basement and maybe have my whole family killed because of this, would I dare do this? It's a frightening question that we all would probably, a lot of us would say no, a lot of us would say yes, but that's a form of courage that we're not often called to display.
Risiera di San Saba was an actual place, and I'd never heard of it. Will you describe it?
Yes, it's a transit camp that is now in modern-day Trieste, Risiera di San Saba. It was a rice husking factory that was converted by the Nazis to a temporary camp where, when you collected all the Jews and you put them on trains to go to Poland, a lot of them would pass through this one transit camp. By 1944, it was turned into a death camp, an extermination camp, because they could not handle all these huge numbers of prisoners coming through, and they built their own crematorium.
Mm.
The story out of Risiera was that they would execute prisoners by by gunshot or by makeshift gas through various ways, but sometimes the prisoners were not dead, not fully dead, when they delivered them to the crematorium.
Mm.
And that was where music was played to hide the sounds of the screams. And I read that history, and I had already gotten this story in my book, but here was this, really confirmation that the story that I had come up with had origins in reality, and, really horrifying reality.
Mm. I read in your bio that during your childhood, your mother did something that sort of began developing your darker sensibilities. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, my mother was an immigrant from China, and she didn't understand English very well. But what she did understand and love was the American horror film. So she took my very young brother and me to every scary movie that Hollywood ever made. And I spent, you know, a lot of my childhood screaming in movie theaters. I think I learned from that the height of entertainment was to scare your audience, and I think I've been doing it ever since.
You certainly do a fabulous job on it. What are you working on now?
I'm working on the 12th Rizzoli and Isles book, which will probably be released late next year.
Any final thoughts about Playing with Fire?
No, I just hope people will go onto my website to listen to a sample of the music in Chendio, which was inspired by the book.
All right, Tess, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Bye now.